Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, the Dayton Gay Men's Chorus is celebrating 10 years of making music with an upcoming concert at the Victoria Theater. Today, you'll hear some of that music, and we'll talk to some of the people that make that organization such a success. Later in the program, we've got a preview of some work journalism students at Miami University are doing. And today, in Reinvention Stories, we'll hear from Daniel Kinney. Up first, the Boy Scouts of America National Council voted to ease a long-standing ban and allow openly gay boys to be accepted as scouts, but not all of the controversy was settled last week. About 1,400 voting members of the nation's leading youth organization cast their ballots at an annual meeting in Dallas, Texas. More than 60% of those voting supported the proposal to lift the ban. Gay adults will still be barred from serving as scout leaders, and debate around that will likely continue in the months, maybe years to come. But Doug Nelson, scout executive with the Miami Valley Council, says with last week's ruling, the scouts can focus on their true mission.
This allows us to unite as a scouting family and allow all youth the opportunity to be a part of the scouting program and benefit from the many things that scouting has to offer. I think that there are those probably still that believe that the leadership standard for adults could or should be changed, and that's a discussion for another day.
The 1,400 voting delegates first gathered Wednesday night, and members were able to express their viewpoints on the issue. Then Thursday, they got back together for the official membership meeting, where they voted on the resolution to lift the ban. Nelson says that when the result of the vote was announced, the reaction in the room was palpable.
The Boy Scouts have been involved in a process related to this topic since late January, early February. And I think that the reaction I felt in the room today was more a sense of relief that the decision has been made and we can all get back to doing what we do best, which is affecting the lives of young people in a positive way with the scouting program.
With yesterday's decision will come criticisms that the resolution went too far or that it didn't go far enough, and the scouts could see their donor levels affected as well. Of the more than 100,000 scouting units in the U.S., 70% are chartered by religious institutions. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, issued weather warnings last week that were credited with saving lives in Oklahoma, and that agency, like other government organizations, is dealing with the impact of the federal budget cuts known as sequestration. NOAA, which includes the National Weather Service, provides hundreds of thousands of weather forecasts across the country annually, including more than 45,000 severe weather warnings for thunderstorms and tornadoes. They operate through a collection of national and regional centers and more than 120 local weather forecast offices, like the one in Wilmington, Ohio. According to Kieran Clayton, director of communications with NOAA, the agency took a 7% overall budget reduction for fiscal year 2013. She says that's left them with a big shortfall.
So we've implemented a hiring freeze. We've delayed pilot projects, cut some of our contracting expenses, et cetera. And unfortunately, those weren't enough to get us over the hurdle for the remainder of the year. So we have proposed 4 furlough days for all 12,000 of our employees.
And just as the military is doing, Clayton says that weather forecasts and other critical missions will be maintained through the furloughs, which will be arranged so that severe weather will still be tracked and those important watches and warnings will still be issued.
You know, when you're talking about 4 unpaid days for employees, this is obviously going to be a financial hardship for some folks within the organization. But we are striving to make sure that the weather forecasts that people have come to rely upon are maintained during this time.
In addition, Clayton says that in the event of an emergency, furloughs can be canceled for critical employees. Budget requests for the next fiscal year have been submitted, but it is unclear whether sequestration will affect the agency in the coming year. The Dayton Development Coalition has wrapped up its annual trip to Washington, D.C. this week. The fly-in included business, educational, and government leaders from the area. This week in Politics, Ohio, Emily McCord spoke with Michael Gessel with the Dayton Development Coalition to talk about the trip.
The purpose of the trip is to strengthen communication between the people of the Dayton region and elected and other officials in Washington, D.C. It's really an educational trip. What we're trying to do is give the Dayton region leaders a deeper understanding of Washington and also make sure that our Washington officials know what we are thinking and what we would like to see out of Washington.
There was a conversation with lawmakers. I understand a lot of it dealt with the federal budget cuts known as sequestration. What's your impression? How receptive is our delegation to the problems of our region?
Oh, I think they're very receptive. They understand what we're trying to do. They're aware of the effects that the budget cuts have on the Dayton region. But just to be on the safe side, we make sure that we give them a little bit more details in reporting on what we're seeing back in Dayton.
Are you getting the impression that there was going to be some working together across the aisle to move any solutions forward on that?
There does seem to be a very deep gulf between the two sides. And as we heard from our presentations, that there is a gap, that the Republicans and the Democrats are still trying to work out their differences, and they're having a hard time.
Outside of sequestration talks, what were other some main topics between our coalition here in the region and our lawmakers?
Well, always on the top of our list is maintaining our federal facilities. We have about 30,000 workers on the federal installations in the Dayton region, mostly at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, but we also have more than 2,000 employees at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center. And so we are always trying to make sure that our lawmakers understand how important these federal facilities are to Dayton and to the economy of Dayton. But one of our top federal priorities this year, as has been in recent years, is unmanned aircraft systems, UAS, that's in the Washington speak, although the press commonly refer to them as drones. We are trying to make the Dayton region a center of UAS manufacturing, research, test, and training. And that's a federal issue because the FAA controls where these aircraft can fly, and the Defense Department does most of the buying and research, at least for now. And so we are encouraging the federal government to get more involved in research, training, and manufacturing of unmanned aircraft systems.
I want to ask you about this idea of pork barrel spending or earmarks. One example that comes to mind, this is a little outside of our region, but in Lima, there's a tank plant that gets a lot of support from our lawmakers. But the Army said, for example, that they don't need these tanks or want these tanks anymore. That idea, I wonder, does the Dayton Development Coalition take that into account when it's pitching some of the things that would benefit our region? Are they things that would also benefit the nation as a whole?
Well, of course, they have to benefit the nation as a whole. When we promote a project, we do so knowing that it is in the national interest. Of course, it will also be in the interest of the Dayton region. But the idea of pork barrel spending really is a concept that is made to put projects in a negative light. One person's pork barrel spending is another person's national significant project.
The Dayton Development Coalition has been doing these trips for 29 years. Is the climate of Congress making it any different this time around to advocate for the Dayton region?
Well, at our level, there's not much of a difference. But we are getting a sense when we hear reports from our congressional leaders that there is more of a sense of frustration. And when we talk to leaders in the Pentagon, which we do every year, there is a much greater sense of frustration. And so there's a regular line that we are hearing from Defense Department officials at all levels that the gridlock in Congress and the inability of Congress to pass budgets and to pass laws in a timely fashion is really making their job much more difficult. And that's a new message that we're getting. That's not been as much a problem in the past.
Michael Gessel is with the Dayton Development Coalition. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Almost 10 years ago, a group of men got together in a small Dayton church. Perhaps some of them came to meet new friends, and maybe some of them came to find out a little bit more about themselves, but they all came to sing. It was the beginning of the journey for the Dayton Gay Men's Chorus.
Let's start at the night and day and see what the sways are.
So we're just going to do it as choreographed?
As choreographed, and we'll make a decision.
Okay.
And a one, two. Night and day.
Last week, a bigger group of men gathered in a bigger church as the DGMC readied itself to celebrate their 10-year journey. It's a much different sight than it was a decade ago. The original gathering has morphed into a group of 34 singing members with a board of directors and numerous volunteers offering their support for the organization. Overseeing the DGMC's evolution since that first day, Fred Poland, a singing member of the chorus, he's also its founder and current board treasurer.
I saw a need in Dayton and something that I was interested in doing, so it was a start as an idea and see if there was interest, and we had 15 guys the first night, and it's kind of just gone from there. I think it's amazing. It's amazing on so many different levels that I never even dreamed of. I never dreamed of productions at the Victoria and the friendships and the people and what they've meant to each other through the years. It's been absolutely amazing. The chorus is my child at this point. It's hard for me. It's my baby, and it's been a process for me to let go. But I still have my hands kind of in the back to make sure that it doesn't fall. And you know, I want to see it succeed as it has. But I've found that I do have to let the baby walk sometimes on its own and be there to pick it up when it falters and keep it going in the right direction. But, you know, that's kind of like any parent, and that's how I kind of see it. It's having been a parent myself, I know, you know, it's hard to let go sometimes.
Four years into its endeavor, the DGMC found itself in need of a new director. Who they found was Jason Codney Schuler. He had just recently joined the chorus, and he says his move from singer to director was not without its challenges.
So 6 years ago, I think, was a big challenge, not knowing what kind of repertoire to select, not knowing the abilities or the limitations of the individual members vocally. Musically as well. Over the course of the past 6 years, each and every single one of the members has grown tremendously in their musical ability and in the musical interpretation, as well as their stamina and what they're capable of doing. Now I'm at the point where I can actually select a piece that has 8 or 12 parts, and they're really not too bad sight reading either. So that's a very, very rewarding thing, knowing that I might have had something to do with that too.
What's it like spending time with a group of people for this long in this organization?
It kind of seems like yesterday. Really, it doesn't seem like 6 years at all. We're a member of Gay and Lesbian Alliance of Choruses around the country, and there are artistic directors that have been with their chorus for 20 years, and I can see how that can easily happen. The time does fly when you're having fun.
This is all baritones and basses, right?
Each morning I wake up, I die a little. Can barely stand on my feet.
Take a look at yourself in the mirror and cry, yeah, yeah.
What I've tried to do programmatically with the song selection, as well as the actual design of the set and the staged elements, I'm hoping the audience takes the journey with us.
Somebody,
while the show looks back at our history, it's not an easy show to do by any means. It pulls all the bell stops and whistles.
Alan Kimbrough is a singing member of the chorus. Last year, he finished a 4-year term as board president. He says while the makeup of the chorus has changed over the years, its purpose has not.
I think the mission really has never changed. We have a well-defined mission. It began with Fred Poland and yourself and others who really sat down and looked at a process where we would sustain ourselves. And we've been focused on our mission from the beginning. That has not changed. Where we've taken that mission has certainly changed, and we've added new pieces as we move along.
Alan mentioned my involvement with the chorus. I was a singing member for the first 7 years. I was one of the original Frightened 15. We called ourselves that because singing as gay men for the first time in public was terrifying. But we made it through our first performance and on to many others. In year two of the chorus, I was elected the first board president. I served a 4-year term, and although I think I was a good starter president, the chorus needed more in terms of organization and community engagement. That came with Alan's leadership.
We did a lot of study and a lot of work in our planning retreats this past summer. We brought in our gala liaison, Representative Eve Campbell, and she helped us sit down and really talk through and ask some serious questions about our history and where we are going. And we challenged ourselves to continually be vital to the community, not just our interior community, that of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, but to the community at large. And so we looked at ways that we can continue to be relevant to the public, because our organization is owned by the public. And we felt that our programming could and should be relatable, viable, relevant to the public at large.
Ma chère mademoiselle, it is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now we invite you to relax. Let us pull up a chair as the dining room proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest.
Set with the task of taking the course even further is current President David Moyer. Like many others who have served in a leadership role with the course, Moyer says in the beginning he just wanted to sing.
I joined the course because I have a huge love for the arts, and I didn't have an outlet to express that anywhere else. And I had a friend that was in the course. He introduced me to the guys. I joined and really kind of fell in love with their mission.
Tell me a little bit about the relationships with these individuals.
Well, they've all kind of become like my brothers. These are guys from all different walks of life, all over Dayton, all different ages, all different backgrounds, but we all have kind of a common goal and sing for a common good, and so you develop a bond that you just can't get anywhere else. My plan as the current board president is to help this course achieve more of a national stage. We're a member of the Gala Courses, which is the gay and lesbian course organization. It's the largest and fastest growing arts organization in America. And I'm hoping to be able to take these guys to the next festival, Gala Festival, which is going to be in Denver in 2016, which represents 5,000, 6,000 singers from all over the world and gay and lesbian choruses alike. That's my plan for these guys.
Comment for me, if you will, on the Gay Men's Chorus and its place in the Dayton community, perhaps a little bit about its importance.
In terms of our place in the Dayton community, I think we've established ourselves as a permanent arts organization. What started off as a group of just a bunch of guys that enjoyed singing together has really become something that is kind of a staple in the community. People expect to see us at certain points of the year. People look forward to our appearances. And I kind of see us as a bridge between not only community action but also the arts, where we can entertain and we have our place here in Dayton, but at the same time we can change minds. We can really move mountains with our message. People that see us in certain areas, we performed in the past. For instance, we've done performances on Courthouse Square. And this is an area where the people that are in front of you are not necessarily your paying patrons. They're not there to specifically see you. And when they hear the Dayton Gay Men's Chorus announced over the loudspeaker, it's natural to see the audience kind of gasp, to kind of look at each other, maybe giggle a little bit because they're unaware of who we are and what we do. But the moment we start singing, there's a hush and there's a roar of applause that, honestly, the first time I ever experienced this was on the Victoria Theater stage. And to see that much acceptance and have people come to the realization of acceptance through song is pretty powerful.
You've also performed at the Dayton Dragons games a number of times. Tell me about that experience.
That's one of those experiences, once again, where you're putting yourself in front of an audience that's not there specifically to see you. And I'll have to admit, the first time that I did this with the chorus, it was extremely intimidating. It was terrifying. And walking in front of such a large group that's there for a sporting event, and then once again have that our name, Dayton Gay Men's Chorus, blasted, it sends chills down your spine because you just don't know what the audience, how they're going to react. I mean, granted, we're singing the Star Spangled Banner, which is a time-honored tradition, but the response that we get, the follow-up that we get, the excitement that the Dragons bring to our organization is really, it's something to see, that's for sure.
current challenges for you as president right now?
Well, we're a growing organization. We're a constantly changing organization. Our repertoire becomes a little bit more complex as we grow more artistically throughout the years. And needless to say, as we, you know, end our 10-year anniversary season, we're starting to see that there's an age gap that we're starting to experience. We do continue to have new members joining each and every single season, sometimes at the beginning of the season, sometimes halfway through. But the biggest challenge for us is to make sure that we stay current and that we stay in front of people and encourage them to get involved. If they have a love for singing and a love for entertaining and a love for delivering a certain message, you know, we have open doors to allow them into our chorus. But that is a challenge, to make sure that you can maintain your membership, maintain those numbers, and continue to grow literally in size.
I've got you under my skin.
Towards me.
I've got you in the heart of me.
The story of the Dayton Gay Men's Chorus can't be told without mentioning the name Raymonde Rouget. She's the accompanist with the chorus and also functions as assistant director. Her experience with arts organizations over the years has played a key role in the DGMC's growth and success in the last 10 years.
I think it's a great opportunity for the guys to get together and have a community, and they also sing. We don't have, to my best of my knowledge, with all the choral groups that are in the Dayton area, we don't have any groups that only totally sing men's songs. There are some groups that have female voices, and there are mixed groups, but this is the only male singing group that just does TTBB songs.
You've been involved with a lot of arts organizations, and tell me how this one stacks up to the rest.
Oh, this is my favorite, I think. It really is. I do several things still. I work with a couple of senior citizen groups. One's a senior citizen show choir in Kettering, and I get to do a lot of fun things with them, and they work really hard. But these guys, it has become family.
And tell me what it's like for, what you think it's like for the audiences viewing a Dayton Gay Men's Chorus concert.
Well, I hope that they are entertained by it all. They should be. There are probably a few people in the audience that think we make it look pretty easy anymore, and it's not very easy. And anybody that performs knows how hard it is and how many times you go through songs to get them just the way you want them to be.
In the early years, it was tough for the men to let go of their notebooks and speak to the courage that these guys have in kind of just letting themselves go.
I hear so much vocal growth, and I've seen so much physical competence in the guys. Early on, when we would get up in concerts and we were just standing and singing, it often looked like deer in the headlights, and people don't look like that when they sing now, so that's kind of exciting.
They're doing a lot more choreography.
Oh, lots more dancing, and some of us are choreographically challenged. So we have things we're dealing with, but we're working it through.
You sang a song early on with the with the men's chorus called "Gay Boyfriend."
I did.
How many gay boyfriends do you have?
How many are in the chorus? I think every guy in the chorus has become my gay boyfriend, and my non-gay boyfriend just smiles and nods.
Raymonde and her boyfriends, the Dayton Gay Men's Chorus, will perform a 10-year retrospective of some of their best songs. On June 1st at the Victoria Theater, part of Pride Weekend in Dayton, you can find out more about the organization at DaytonGayMen'sChorus.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. Over the last year, journalism students at Miami University have been interviewing a misunderstood population at their school, student veterans. The resulting 20-minute audio documentary is available on our website, wyso.org. In honor of Memorial Day, here's an excerpt from the project.
You start your life again. Everything was on pause while you're over there. I mean, you can't advance in education, job, relationships, friendships. Everything you do over there is just on pause from your last when you left. But basically, you start a new beginning.
When you're coming out of the military, you're really self-conscious, and you want to go to school, and you want to do these things. I mean, I don't even know how to register for classes, you know.
I think the transition from basic training to second semester sophomore year was the hardest compared to anything. That was just, I couldn't stand it. And just kind of like a lost individual, I felt, you know, just really couldn't connect with anyone. Because, you know, before I went to basic, I was like all those kids. I was, a kid at Miami. And then I, you know, went through that and, you know, I really kind of grew up there. But, you know, I came back to the situation where you're seeing 40 of the best friends when you left, and now they're getting cliquey, and, you know, you're seeing that people really are showing their true colors, and you don't like those true colors, and so that was a big issue.
You know, I feel like I'm kind of late in life getting things going, you know. It's like, you know, it's kind of humbling when you're, you know, 30 walking around college, you know. And
when I first got back, everything terrified me. Like, I'd be walking down the street and constantly looking over my back because you don't want to make sure somebody's not going to come around the corner and shoot you. Motorcycles would scare the crap out of me. Fireworks, I still don't deal with those. Driving on the street or driving my car just anywhere and I'd see potholes, I'd start slowing down or try to avoid them just to make sure there's no IEDs or anything in them. I'm a lot better now, but it's taken, I've been out for 4 years. It's taken 4 years and I'm still not completely recovered.
I'm a civilian now, and I see a lot of how the vets are treated when they come home from Iraq. They're not getting the medical care. They're getting screwed out of their benefits just because the government doesn't have any money, which is not their fault. They went, they fought, they sacrificed. It's not easy to be military, and it's not easy to be a veteran.
That is an excerpt from an audio documentary put together by Miami University journalism students. You can hear the full 20-minute documentary on our website at wyso.org. This week on Reinvention Stories, Daniel Kenny. Kenny works third shift at UTC Aerospace Systems, a company that makes wheels and brakes for airplanes. He's been an electrician for over 20 years. He and his wife, Keisha, own and operate Caribicanas, a Caribbean food truck. They are part of a group of people reinventing dining. Kenny saw that the food truck movement had potential and recognized the instability in manufacturing, so he decided to make the leap.
I was at GM when they were making everything modern shortly before they went belly up. They were in there putting new robots in, you know, prior to them shutting it down. While my future seems pretty secure at UTC, you just never know what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. So my thing was to have something that I can fall back on in case the bottom dropped out of anything. Me and my wife both love Caribbean food, and there wasn't any place around you could get Caribbean food at. And we decided to just go ahead and do it and put it on wheels, and instead of doing the brick and mortar because that's so much overhead. And this, we both work full time, you know, and this is something that we do to supplement our income and, you know, bring the food to the people. I do the cooking. She usually does the serving, and then I'll jump in and fill in whenever I can. I would have to say our pulled pork and our jerk chicken. Those are the favorites. Those are the hottest sellers, and those are what I like turning out. We've done the Michelob series, the Women in Jazz, Reggae Festival, and the Blues Festival last year. We currently do not do street vending any longer. Some changes came along with the city, so we're abiding by that. And thing is, we've booked up enough stuff that, honestly, I don't miss it. There are other cities who welcome food trucks with open arms. Dayton has just not gotten there yet. I'd like to see them get there, but they're not there yet. When I'm on the truck, I'm in the zone. I don't, you know, think about work or anything else. I mean, I think about what I'm doing at the moment. I got on Craigslist and got to looking. I seen a couple others that were just plain white trucks, and I found this one out in Vandalia. I'm like, okay, blue and yellow. It's colorful. You know, if you go to an event, are you going to go up to the plain white truck or you going to go up to the colorful truck? And I thought that was kind of an advantage and edge for us. Plus, it was in good shape as far as the paint, so we didn't have to do anything with that. You know, it's paid for. It's mine. I can keep it parked. I can take it out when I want to. You know, I can choose my events that I want to work. I can work when I want to. And that's what I like about it. I'd like to make the transition to eventually doing this full time. as opposed to being an electrician. I mean, I've been an electrician for, you know, over 25 years. I know what that's like. I know how to do that. This here is something I've just been into for just two seasons now. And more and more ideas are coming at me for different dishes and foods to make, and I enjoy doing it.
The Caribicanas food truck will be hitting the streets again this summer. To see a short film about Daniel Kinney, visit wiso.org. This reinvention story was produced by Steve Bognar, Basim Blunt, and Sarah Buckingham. Reinvention Stories is brought to you by WYSO and Local Lore, a national initiative produced by AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, Incorporated, in collaboration with ZEGA, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us on 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org, a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.